Radio Gorgeous, where women do the talking.
Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
I'm Kara Hoffman. I'm the author of the novel Be Safe, I Love You, and the critically acclaimed novel So Much Pretty.
And could you tell us a little bit about the story of Be Safe, I Love You?
Be Safe, I Love You is the story of Lauren Clay, a soldier who's returning from a tour of duty in Iraq to her family. She's been the primary breadwinner since she was young. She returns home and has some trouble adjusting and decides it might be a good idea to kidnap her little brother and take him out into the Arctic wilderness to teach him how to survive.
Because that's always a good idea.
Yeah. Really good idea.
Good idea. One of the things this brought up for me was that, one, it's an incredibly compellingly written book.
Thank you.
Both the characters of Lauren and her little brother are really beautifully drawn, and they're characters you're drawn to, despite what's going on with Lauren. Some of the ways in which you write, there are letters between the two of them, mostly from her younger brother to her,
right?
That are really, I just love the idea of calling her Sistifer.
Okay.
Like Sister for Robin, it's really, their relationship was so beautifully drawn. But one of the things that, just bring up, we have become inured to a certain extent of male soldiers coming home and suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and killing themselves or their loved ones. But what brought that whole thing, freshness to it, was that it was a female soldier coming home. Is that something you wanted to highlight?
It's interesting, it is important for me, as a woman and as a feminist, to tell stories in which we see women as full people with a full range of experience, which I think is lacking in general in fiction and in film. But it is really also, just as a journalist, it's something that I think is more simple than that, which is, this is the time in which we live, and the time in which we live, there are many, many women soldiers returning from combat, and they're not just people who've been sitting at a desk or doing combat support. They've been out with other soldiers, with traditionally doing jobs that men have been doing before. So I thought it was important to write about her because she's someone, who exists in the world, this woman soldier.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when troops, first went into Iraq in the aftermath of September 11th, one of the drivers for Lauren to going into the army is the only driver for her going into the army is economic, because she starts on a different path. She's a talented singer, and she's, there was a different path that she was set to go on, and the economic realities and sort of emotional realities of her family drove her to join the army. And I remember there being people who, for economic reasons had joined the army, and then had families, women who had families, men obviously who had families, and who were really kind of freaked out that they had to go into combat, because they sort of joined a peacetime army.
Yeah.
And were hoping to, get the college education. It's a way of making money, but hadn't planned on war.
Absolutely. I think that's very common. Many, many people, like my brother, for example, who did two tours of duty in Afghanistan, he joined the army, and he enlisted when he was young, he joined during a time of, you know, relative peace. I don't know what we are calling peace, but certainly not actively going into combat. You know, later he ended up being, you know, a combat soldier, and I think that's a common experience. And again, and also he did join for economic reasons when he joined. And I think this is very common. You know, we're seeing, you know, some war memoirs, some things that are coming back, you know, from soldiers who are coming back. They're generally written by, you know, I think people who are officers and not necessarily enlisted people, you know, people from different experiences back home where they maybe have some other options. So for Lauren and for the vast majority of people who do enlist, that's not the case. People are enlisting in the Army because they would like to have an income. And in our current economy in the United States, that's a pretty good option. Or at least it's a gamble they're willing to take because there are no jobs for them here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there is also, which I think you nicely, it's, you know, very naturally and correctly expressed in the book, is that there is a disdain for people who join the Army from people who do have other options.
I think so. I don't know if it's a disdain or just a very serious lack of understanding that the class reality for somebody who can very simply make another choice is very, very different from somebody who is who's stuck, you know, mm-hmm. whose choices are limited, who has to do something and maybe can't take in, don't have the luxury of taking in the full global moral weight of what they're doing, but need to think of it on a more personal, more immediate level.
Yeah, an expedient level.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's a debate going on here, whether, because here women are, as you say, combat support,
right.
But they are not combat soldiers, although they're in very similar situations. Do you think women should be in combat? I just ask you as...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's really no question. If you think back about all the things that we've been told throughout history that women should not be doing or are physically not capable of doing or, you know, are mentally not capable of doing, the list is very, very long and very absurd in the light of reality. You know, mm-hmm. women weren't allowed to vote at one point. Women weren't allowed to have jobs outside the home. So things like that, you know, another thing that's just a restriction, it's just clearly a discriminatory sexist restriction, I find absurd. You know, the other thing I think is so ridiculous about that is, you know, with technology, there really is not anything that a woman soldier can't do that a man could, right? They, mm-hmm. they basically have the same abilities, the same capabilities. And studies have shown that women are, in fact, better pilots than men. I mean, that's just...
Interesting.
That's just what I've been reading about. So there's all kinds of things that have to do with, you know, biology, sure. You know, men may be physically stronger, but as far as technology is concerned, that's a moot point. And then you have other things related to risk-taking and hormones and chemicals, and you see that, in fact, women often, in combat situations, make a steadier and often better soldier.
Interesting. And yet it's the very idea that it's killing, and that's what it is. I mean, you can't really dress it up any other way. I mean, that's
right.
What we,
yeah.
You know, that's what war is. And
right, yeah, you're a soldier, you train to kill. And I think people have been uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people say, you know, the reason that there is this, you know, this idea that women can't go into the Army is because people are uncomfortable with the idea of women dying now.
Mm-hmm. And killing.
The majority of our entertainment and a vast majority of the reality we live with is women being killed, women, in fact, being murdered. Every thriller that we've ever watched or seen.
They start out with that slow, lingering pan over a dead woman's body.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So The idea of a woman being killed, I'm afraid, is neither something that we're not accustomed to, nor is it something that society in general has a real problem with. But the idea of a woman killing, on the other hand, that is something that we're not accustomed
yes.
to. It is something that people have a problem with. The idea of a woman having the same type of power as a man, and that includes being somebody who's trained to kill and who kills. And so I think, and it's very, very simple when you look at why the restriction exists. And I think in the end, of course, that restriction will be lifted as it has been in other countries. And, you know, we will see militaries that are more like the Israeli military, where mm-hmm. you have a professional co-ed military.
This is Attica Locke, and you're listening to Radio Gorgeous.
And unfortunately, it doesn't make us examine what these situations are doing to the people who are in them. we just seem to be putting, okay, great, we can, you know, we can put more and more people in them, in these situations, in combat
yeah.
situations, but, you know, and they come home and they're, you know, and they're really, some people are really quite damaged by these experiences, and there doesn't seem to be much in place to healthily get them out.
No, in fact, I think that's very true. You know, we've seen so many reports recently in the United States about the shortcomings of the VA hospital and VA clinic system here. And, you know, one of the things, of course, that I write about in the book, and Be Safe, I Love You, that's really, in many ways, the heart of it, is this issue of PTSD and of recognizing when someone is traumatized and recognizing those things, because in the United States we have 22 veterans a day killing themselves.
Yeah.
So that's nearly one, you know, veteran an hour, one person who serves in the military an hour. And for active duty soldiers, it's one a day. So this is really a big issue of we're going to put people in these situations, and if we're going to do that, then the responsibility is to take care of them when they come home.
Yeah, because in the States there is this idea, you know, that and because it's an army, it's reinforced that these are people who are expendable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we say, oh, the heroes, and we wrap trees and, you know, yellow ribbons. And yet at the end of the day, it seems like, you know, the actions look like we are treating them as expendable.
There is no doubt that that is exactly what it looks like. Absolutely.
Yeah. And what was your brother's experience?
My brother went to Afghanistan twice, once with the Special Forces and once as a training mission for the Afghan National Army. I would say that he sees his experience as having been very positive in many, many ways. He came home and became a military contractor after he had done his tours with the Army. And then as eventually he's finally quit that job and is now living in Santa Fe writing science fiction, which makes me very, very happy because,
yes.
I think the other part of his experience is that he was at war, and he was at war twice. He was away from our family, and he was away from his own family, his children, and it was rough, and he was injured. So I think his experience was better than a lot of people's experiences, but it was not untraumatic. It didn't, you know, he experienced the things that soldiers generally experience, and one of those things, of course, is this big separation from family and, you know, reintegrating into life after that and trying to figure out what you're going to do. And I think at this point he's got a great plan for what he's going to do.
Good.
Yeah.
Because there are, to me, it struck me, you know, because, okay, so you're a soldier, you're far away from home, you're in these extreme circumstances, you're looking at everything with suspicion, fear, danger, and then you sort of think about your family back home and you sort of want them sort of stuck in amber to be safe. To be
yeah.
just stuck, and yet they move on as well.
Yes. That's a huge part of what Be Safe, I Love You is about. that Lauren comes home and she has left at a time that was sort of volatile for her family. She's had to do a lot of caretaking. Her father really wasn't up for the task. And she goes away, and when she returns, things are a little more settled. Her family is doing actually okay without her, and she's not used to this. And that readjustment, as well as just the readjustment from being back, you know, upstate New York instead of being out in the desert, those two things converge in a way that that really shake her up, in addition to the things that she experienced that she did while she was in Iraq.
Yeah. And that sense of, it sounds like your brother is finally ready to let go of sort of, I think they're, to me, it seems like they're, it's not Stockhausen syndrome, but there seems to be a comfort in military norms. In,
of course, yes.
When you come home.
Studies actually show that people do better, have less PTSD when they do stay within the, you know, what you're calling those military norms, that being within that community is actually a big help, like being around people who understand what's going on, and even staying in the military can be something that is actually helpful for some people.
Yeah, for that structure and that control over circumstances.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. And you've had quite a peripatetic existence yourself. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
I've had some... I dropped out of high school and traveled when I was an adolescent, and instead of going to college, and that experience really shaped my life quite a bit. I was sort of living in Europe and in Southern Europe and in the Middle East, and working different under the table jobs in order to survive and get around and see the things that I wanted to see. And then I returned to the United States, and I had a baby, and started working for newspapers sort of at a very, very low level, starting out first actually delivering papers and then gradually working my way up to being a reporter. And yeah, I didn't go to college. I didn't have a traditional educational experience. I didn't finish high school. I didn't go to college. And then later, I was actually admitted to an MFA program, so I got my traditional, more traditional education after I was actually an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And growing up where you grew up, sort of in a bit of Appalachia country, I mean, were there a lot of people who did probably turn to the military there?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say, I would say that's reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people went to the military. A lot of people, went to SUNY schools or things like that, or dropped out of high school or got jobs. I mean, there's a variety of things that people did. But, yeah, I mean, where I come from, it's a very, very depressed economy. A lot of people go on to be prison guards and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's sort of more the norm, the per capita income. Not so great where I come from.
Yeah, yeah. And it occurs to me, sort of working those kinds of jobs in Europe, it's sort of a similar, similar communities and sort of itinerant working, it must have been fascinating.
I was working as a landscaper, I was digging ditches, and I worked in cotton fields and orchards and things like that, and I worked, as a runner when I was living in Greece and things like this. So it was definitely on the fringes of what would be, I guess, a normal, I don't know what you call normal, but I guess ironically I did end up doing very similar work as if I'd stayed, back upstate.
Yeah. Well, it'd be very different from someone here. It's quite normal here between sort of what you and I would call high school and college, but here, sort of the end of school and before you go to university, taking a gap year.
Yeah.
You did it a little differently.
Yeah, I took a few gap years. Like some gap years. Yeah,
and then, some gaps in there.
Yeah. I guess many gap years before high school and college,
mm-hmm.
or between high school and college.
Yes. And then you end up, you know, writing and then teaching creative writing as well.
Yes, I don't actually teach creative writing. I teach literature. And
great.
It's pretty ironic. I mean, I teach at a community college, which I absolutely love and think is, you know, the best place to teach. I really, really am very fond of the community college system here, which is 2-year school, and pretty much anybody can enroll in them, which I think is absolutely fantastic. The reason I actually applied for an MFA was because I wanted to teach, which was pretty funny, being somebody who had never, ever wanted to be in school my entire life, and then realizing that there were schools that were just doing fantastic things, and I wanted to be a part of them.
Wow. So what's next for you? Are you working on your next book, or?
I am. My next book is called Running, and it's a story of some homeless expat kids living in Athens, Greece.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm very happy with it.
Yeah.
I'm very happy to be working on it. It's a lot of fun.
Do you have to do research and go back?
I am going back, yeah. I'm going back in September, and I'm going to stay in Athens for a while. I'm going to be in Delphi for a while as well. I'm very excited.
Ah, fantastic. Thank you so much, Kara.
Oh, thank you, Donna. This was a great conversation.
They're really,
really
nice.
Happy to have been on the show.